You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio on this snowy Monday morning here up north, brought to you by Courier Newsroom, carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network at 7:06 on this Monday morning, February 3rd. Nice to have you along. Coming up at 7:30, we're going to be talking to Chris Thiel, legislative specialist from the Milwaukee Public School District. There's a lot being said in this election for state superintendent of public instruction about standardized tests and test scores and how to label those test scores and who should be changing those test scores. And that's all fine and good, but Chris Thiel is here to remind us, don't forget, you can set the bar wherever you like, but if the legislature is continuing to neglect, or I would argue have an outright war against public schools, then what are you doing to set the bar other than to use that to punish public education? So we'll talk more about that issue coming up at 7:30. It does give me an opportunity to remind you that there is an election in Wisconsin 2 weeks from tomorrow. There is a primary election because there are three candidates for state superintendent. And so on February 18th, the top two vote getters will advance to the April 1st general election. That April 1st election will also feature a race for state Supreme Court. You'll have Dane County Judge Susan Crawford versus Waukesha County Judge and former Wisconsin Attorney General Brad Schimmel. We'll be talking all about that between now and April 1st as well. For more information on voting, what else is on your ballot, head over to myvote.wi.gov. I want to thank everybody as well for their nice comments and input with the second edition of our new political newsletter. As you know, Christina Laurie puts together a weekday newsletter filled with features and the occasional news story, and we've got one today all about Black History Month. And now with the state budget under consideration and a new administration in Washington, we thought we'd set up a week in review political newsletter that goes out on Sunday mornings now. Again, head over to upnorthnewswi.com, sign up for our newsletters, and you can get a hold of our weekend edition one as well. A band of snow is moving all across the northern half of Wisconsin or so. We'll find out how long that's going to last and where our temperatures go with meteorologist Brittany Merlot, who is with us now, along with Luke Mathers, who's in for Greg Bach, who will be back tomorrow, I believe. Dr. Kristen Lyerly is here. Selena Heller is here. Brittany, did you have a good weekend?
Oh, I sure did. I actually went up north and chased some of that snow that fell yesterday. That was beautiful up there. Snowmobilers up there, snowmobiling across by Lake Superior. It was gorgeous to see that lifestyle going on, because it's not happening here in Wausau, that's for sure.
No, it's really not. Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. It's 29 degrees, plenty of snow, 3 inches so far. I've been plowing snow since 3:30 this morning. Looks like more is coming. He says, last night for the third time, my Facebook Messenger and Instagram was hacked. I hope my friends can always be in touch with me. Oh, no. It's frustrating with my connections and pictures. I love to share my pictures. And we talked about World War I starting on this day for the U.S. And he says his grandpa, Paul, was a World War I veteran who was a victim of, poison gas that was used by the German army back then. But again, we're very appreciative to Rob for his grandfather and everybody else for their service. So there's Rob's little weather report and more from Tigerton. He had 3 inches there. I would put us at about 2 inches here in Chippewa Falls. What are you seeing out there, Brittany?
I've got about 2.5 here into Wausau, which was nice to wake up to. And it's still coming down, that winter weather advisory in effect for a lot of us until noon today. Probably another 2 to 3 inches or so for a majority of especially central to, of course, eastern parts of that advisory. So this is spanning all the way from the cities, Eau Claire, through Wausau into the Green Bay, Fox Valley area and Door County as well. And of course, this will wind down by the afternoon. We're going to stay cloudy and our temperatures are going to start falling. So the warmest is pretty much right now this morning with a slow drop throughout the afternoon and crashing tonight. So highs anywhere from the upper 20s far north to some upper 30s down south by the state line. So they're still feeling some mild, mild temperatures. But for tomorrow, we all take a hit. Highs will only be in the mid-teens to mid-20s. It'll be a breezy day, mostly cloudy, with more snow on the way for Wednesday. And in fact, that one's bringing a wintry mix and some ice conditions for portions of the state. So Wednesday, another shot of more snow after this afternoon.
Okay. Did you say you were snowmobiling on Lake Superior, or you were
I was just watching.
You were just watching it on there. Okay. No, because Tony put up from Ashland. I can barely see the lake through all the trucks and ice fishing shacks. And yes, it's true. I've been up there, and that near shore to Lake Superior is very busy this time of year.
But it's nice to see them out there and enjoying the winter. You know what I mean? There's something to do, and they're out there doing it.
That's right. Exactly. All right. Well, Brittany, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Have a
wonderful day. All right. We'll talk to you later. Selena's here to tell us a bit about some of the Wisconsin reaction to the first couple of weeks of the Trump presidency. I will note that over the weekend, the president did make it official that tariffs were going to be imposed on some of our closest trading allies, Canada and Mexico, as well as China. So, again, for a campaign that was all about prices being too high, all of those nations have already announced retaliatory measures. So there's no two ways about it. Prices are going to go up for some things along the way, not to mention all the other things that we could talk about over these past 2 weeks. In fact, Selena and Kristen, I tried to start a document and I didn't start it soon enough about all of the things, all of Trump's steps, like renaming the Gulf of Mexico, renaming Mount McKinley, pulling out of the World Health Organization, pulling out of the Paris Climate Accords, firing the inspectors general, and on. But I know I've missed some. I got to go back and look because, I mean, I'm at three dozen things already. And again, for every one of them, like we said, some of them are just for noise, but some of them have real impact. That, Selena, you've talked to people that want to know what can they do. You know, who can they band together with to, you know, again, try to show some resistance and maybe show some hope, you know, for the future?
Yeah, and that's exactly right, because that's what they talked about is hope. And we do have hope in things and just different causes and things to think about. A lot of the hope was they talked about fair maps. And so that's always been in the people that I've talked to lately. That's kind of been the kind of highlight that they like to talk about. So on Saturday, a lot of groups got together just to talk about what do we do next? And we kind of have to come together and for a lot of these causes. Like, so this group was the Eau Claire Coalition, and it's gather with multiple area grassroots organizations to collaborate and celebrate and prepare for 2025. And so it was groups like the League of Women Voters, Citizen Action of Wisconsin. My gosh, we talked about voting, and I just talked to so many great people just about the causes that they care about. And it was just so neat and refreshing just to hear so many viewpoints and how they're eager to just kind of step in and get a lot done. So one of those people was, oh my goodness, Robert Craig of Citizen Action of Wisconsin. And he, you know, just like the others talked about, you know, people have to come together, and this is Robert.
But I would just say that I hope I know you're all involved because you're here and you want to get involved. You came here to find out about getting involved. But join with one of these groups, and it's people coming together and working together. That is what changes society. That is what democracy is. Because I think in the end, the crisis in democracy is this: not just voting, not just the attack on the integrity of elections. It is democracy hasn't been delivering for people. And what we need to do is we need to deliver high-class, world-class education for everyone, make healthcare a right, address the climate crisis and other environmental crises, create an economy where we don't have the massive economic and racial inequalities that we have, which are unconscionable. Rather than going the opposite direction, because this means coming together, where we simply vilify other people, we blame others for everything.
But that, of course, has been, you know, Donald Trump's secret sauce, is to blame others for everything rather than actually provide a service and coming together. But it is heartwarming to see such a large group of groups, basically, in the Chippewa Valley saying we should work together more often.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they wanted to do. Like, going forward, one guy stood up and he said, can we meet like this, like 85 times a year, because this is so good. And we just want to talk about kind of moving forward all together and talking about all of these things and helping one another and getting people involved. And it was really neat to see all of those groups come together. There's like the Wisconsin Education Network too, and the Farmers Union, Jonah, Black and Brown Women's Power Coalition. So just a lot of different groups. And I got to talk to representatives kind of from all of those things. And it was just so neat to hear their, I mean, a trepidation, of course, but excitement also moving forward with people behind them.
With this note of caution, and Kristen, you can talk to this, is it is too easy to fall into the trap then of just creating your own echo chamber, your own, you know, loop of communication of unhappiness with the present situation. And to break out of that cycle requires taking some kinds of action, not just talking amongst yourselves.
This is the reason for the blitzkrieg of information and chaos that President Trump has let loose on our country. He wants us to feel like we're alone. He wants us to feel like we are in our own echo chamber and that there's nothing that we can do. And Robert Craig has the solution. The answer is to band together. It's got to be grassroots. It's got to come from our communities. And it's beautiful to hear that this is happening. And I believe that this is sustainable and it is going to be the solution.
We will talk more to Selena Heller about a new topic. This week is National Girls and Women in Sports Day. So we're going to hear from Selena about that in just a moment. But I want to wrap up this discussion on what Trump is doing. As we began it, talking about trade and tariffs, this is former President Ronald Reagan in 1988 talking about trade wars and the harm that they do, and how nice it would be if more people from the party that used to be the party of Reagan would heed his words today.
Our peaceful trading partners are not our enemies. They are our allies. We should beware of the demagogues who are ready to declare a trade war against our friends, weakening our economy, our national security, and the entire free world, all while cynically waving the American flag. The expansion of the international economy is not a foreign invasion. It is an American triumph, one we worked hard to achieve, and something central to our vision of a peaceful and prosperous world of freedom.
Wouldn't it be something if we could just heed those words? Back with more after this. This is Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Some kind of difference.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Here's that song that Donald Trump dances to.
Whoa.
Yeah, we're done with that. YMCA by the Village People on this day in 1979 topped out on the charts at number 2. But somebody has ruined the song for us, so we're done playing that one.
We could do Hot to Go. That's the new one.
Oh, yeah, let's do Hot to Go.
We did that yesterday here in the living room.
Okay, well, Mr. Mathers has his instructions now on how we're ending this segment. Back now on this Monday morning with Selena Heller, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, Luke Mathers as well. And we're going to be talking here with Selena and then tomorrow with Christina Lurie about how Wednesday is National Girls and Women and Sports Day. Selena, tell us more about that.
Ronald Reagan signed the proclamation in 1987 as National Women in Sports Day. So now it is National Girls and Women in Sports Day, just to recognize the combination of women and girls in sports, promoting gender equity and health and social benefits of sports. I was at the UW-Eau Claire women's basketball game a couple of weeks ago and watched women's basketball. And a couple hours before the game, I got to talk to their coach and the captain, one of the captains. And we talked about like how important it is for girls to be in sports. And it was pretty cool because Tanya England has been the head coach at UW-Eau Claire for 25 years. And she talked about, it was kind of neat to listen to her just to talk about the importance of being in one place and to be kind of that role model for people and to be a part of the community and kind of show what that life is for her team. So this is Tanya talking about National Girls and Women in Sports Day for her.
It's because there's been so many women that have fought for those opportunities that came before us. I think very often of Sandy Schumacher, who was the first women's basketball coach here, Lisa Herb, who was our volleyball coach, and also women's basketball coach Lisa Stone, the coaches that came before me that fought to make sure that the women had the opportunities that the men had. And there's been parents, there's been dads that have done so many things to make sure that their girls have opportunities. It's a day to celebrate that. But it also is a day for us to reset and continue to do those things. I think I have to tell the stories to my players now because they don't really realize many of those things. And so we can't stop telling those stories. We have to make sure that we continue to move the dial and to push it forward.
Yeah, not taking things for granted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that night that I was there, 12 girls' youth teams were there. So I talked to the little girls and everything. And so it's a joke within my family that I try to get Emery to play basketball because I play basketball since the third grade. So we're aiming for third grade. She's going to start playing basketball. She's like, no, I'm not playing basketball. Come on.
Well, she said, Selena, you could play on a third grade basketball team now. You are not that much taller.
That's true. Okay.
But I suppose if you got shooting accuracy, but I'm sure this day means a lot for, you know, girls and women everywhere looking at their opportunities.
Yeah. And to those little girls, I talked to them, you know, what does this do for you? And they said, you know, being on a team gives you, you know, you can meet friends and so social benefits, but also confidence was the big one. And that's what also Tanya talked about too. So here she is talking about that.
Oh, it's one of those things that I don't think that people that are not around sports truly understand the impact that it makes, especially for girls. I will tell you that I was a shy 6-foot fifth grader who was not very athletic when my dad put me in boys basketball because there was just not a lot of girls' opportunities. Great girl dad who wanted to make sure I had the opportunities, and honestly, life changed in a moment when I started playing basketball. It took me in a different direction, but it was also my grades got better. I grew as a person, I had friends. My life was just different because I found confidence in sports, and it wasn't necessarily the case in anything else for me. And so I think people need to understand it's not just the sport, it's what it does overall for girls when they have that opportunity to grow in one particular area.
That's again Tanya England, the coach of the UW-Eau Claire women's basketball team. And Kristen, I know that there's, you know, no shortage of impact on girls and women, and you're part of the state and encouraging them. And we can get off in other areas as well, like, you know, getting women to run for office and everything else. But you got to start as a kid and letting girls know that they can do pretty much anything they want.
I'm thinking about those little girls on the ice skating rink up here who are like skating circles around me. And what an incredible women's hockey team Wisconsin has had historically. Look at women's volleyball. Look at some of the gains that we've seen really across the country. Caitlin Clark from Iowa. Look at what she's done for women's basketball in general.
Well, look at yesterday
that she's generated.
Yesterday in Iowa, they retired her jersey. They brought it up to the rafters. You know, a generation ago, you could have said, I don't know if a woman's jersey is ever going to be hanging up in the rafters, you know, in any given arena. And that is changing now.
Groundbreaking. And people are responding. They like it. I remember people, 10 years ago saying, it's not entertaining to watch women play basketball. Oh, really? Uh-huh. Tell me that now.
Right. And you look at how that's grown. Now we have professional volleyball leagues as well and other things like that. And a lot has changed in short order. And I guess maybe not that short of order, because when Tanya England mentioned, Lisa Stone, who has coached the Badger basketball team, but coached at UW-Eau Claire. And when Tanya England's name first came up, I'm like, oh yeah, she's the one who just took over for Lisa Stone not that long ago. Yeah. 25 years?
Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, she said that. I'm like, been that long. Wow.
Holy cow.
Think about it. You need people who played, who can coach, who can ref, who can build that infrastructure. It's not like you can just take someone like her and plug her into a men's basketball team and say, yep, women in sports. So it requires, look at women's soccer and the dominance that they've had in the U.S. It requires a village, but we've got that village now. We're moving in that direction, and we still will have groundbreaking folks who are going to continue to pop up and pull women and girls in sports forward. But man, we are in such a different place than we were when Ronald Reagan declared this in 1987.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's just such great strides, great progress, and still pushback, of course, because, you know, that's wokeism now. There are federal agencies over the weekend that have, closed up exhibits dedicated to women who showed leadership position in certain agencies. And I don't say that to bring the room down, but to say, don't take anything for granted, you know, like all other rights, you got to maintain them. Mm-hmm. And not just assume that, oh, mission accomplished. You always have to be looking out for yourself and for your rights.
Right.
Kristen, thank you. Have a wonderful week. Get some rest.
Happy Monday.
Selena, thank you so much for everything. And coming up next, we will talk to Chris Steele from Milwaukee Public Schools about the state superintendent race and standardized test scores and putting things into perspective. We'll be right back. Back now on Up North News Radio, and we are talking again with Chris Steele, legislative policy specialist for Milwaukee Public Schools. And this time around, we want to talk about testing in schools around Wisconsin, standards, labels, changes, and also hopefully helping some folks connect the dots, because you can't just talk about test scores in a vacuum, especially when you see what has happened in Madison over the past 15 years or so. Chris Steele, hello. Thanks for joining us again. How are you?
Morning, Pat. Good. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you again for being part of this. Before I forget, let me let folks know that even before we begin this discussion, that I will be talking tomorrow at this time live with State Superintendent Jill Underley, and then the next day, Wednesday, at 7:05 with Jeff Wright, who's running for State Superintendent, and we are still waiting on Brittany Kinzer to get back to us. So candidate interviews to come, but we really wanted to get at this issue that has become somewhat central to the race for State Superintendent of Public Instruction. So we're going to talk about test scores, the standards, the changes that have taken place, and we're going to get to the root causes. So let's start with the test scores, Chris. Can you tell folks, what are these test scores that are being talked about, these standardized tests that are given? This is just an elementary school, is that right?
It's actually elementary and into K-12. And so, okay. I guess the history of this, the recent history, maybe looking back over the last 25 years, kind of was coming more to prominence with the No Child Left Behind Act. I think people might remember that. That was at the federal level. And at the time, this Congress passes, but President Bush was the president at the time, and we had No Child Left Behind. And that law, that federal law, said we were going to get to a standard where we're going to have 100% of students across the country be proficient. Which is not a bad thing, right? If we could have 100% proficiency amongst all of our students, that would be great. And at the time, the federal government was promising to give students with disabilities, 40% reimbursement. They were really given, 11 or 12%. And they said, we're going to help kids in poverty with a program called Title I. And, we're only going to give you this much money. And people said, okay, so if we're going to raise this bar, I mean, essentially, this story is there's a long history, Pat, of setting the bar, but forgetting about the most important part, which is how we're going to help kids get there. And so when you questioned No Child Left Behind and said, are we putting enough resources in there? At the time, the president kind of not so subtly suggested you might be a bigot. He would describe the soft bigotry of low expectations was his phrase.
Right.
But nobody was saying we can't get kids to that level. People were just saying we have to put resources in place. So that's kind of, you know, in recent history where that started. Then to bring it down kind of to the state level, after about 10 years of that, when funding did not, you know, wasn't put in place and people realized we weren't getting to that 100% bar, the federal government changed its policy, but said to the states, you need to take a look at where you have set your proficiency bar and put it at a higher level. The thing that I think is really interesting between that federal conversation and that state level conversation is there's nothing in the U.S. Constitution that demands that students be provided a sound basic education. But there is something in the Wisconsin state constitution that demands that students be provided a sound basic education. So the federal level, you can say whatever you want where you set the bar. But at the state level, when you set the bar, the law actually says you have to give students the opportunity to be proficient to wherever you set that bar. So in 2011, kind of in this exchange between the federal government and the state government, there was a lot of other things going on. As you may recall, we had Act 10, had significant state budget cuts happening. And right in that same moment, the thing that kind of gets forgotten in the middle of all that is overnight, and there are newspaper articles to this effect, the adults in the state raised the bar for what it means to be proficient. So, you know, 40-50% of kids who were proficient on a Tuesday were not proficient on a Wednesday. And you would think, okay, we're going to raise the bar. Let's have all our kids be successful at this higher level, that you would then increase funding for students to get them there. But in 2011, as you know, we actually cut funding. So we raised the bar, but cut the funding. And that obviously just doesn't make any sense. And so here we are again, 15 years on, talking about, you know, where the bar is going to be set, when the major part of the conversation needs to be, okay, but are we going to give our kids the resources to get them to where we want them to be?
So the test that is being discussed here, one of them is called the Forward Exam, and the Forward Exam is given every spring, and there had been one set of labels, advanced, proficient, basic, below basic. There was some changes made in the testing, new labels, which were now advanced, meeting, approaching, and developing. And the complaint seems to be that the previous scores that told you where you were on one of those labels aligned with a national standard called the National Assessment of Educational Progress, whereas these new standards are essentially Wisconsin only. Now, Wisconsin's not the only state that has kind of put some separation between itself and the national standard. But the question, Chris, then becomes, you know, why was it done? And is it done for the betterment of students and better measurement of Wisconsin education quality?
I think the quick answer to that is yes, in a non-politicized context. As you mentioned, there are other states across the country who, you know, if you have different tests, if you have different assessment systems, things get updated, and there is a regular process by which assessments get updated and, you know, where we place these scores. And there are people who are deeply knowledgeable about this work called psychometricians, and they get into the deep math of, you know, how we should, if you have a new test, how should you, you know, change where the proficiency bar is relative to that new test. And there's a lot of nuanced work that goes into that. But I think what's happened and what you're seeing is this is getting boiled down to the phrase that we're lowering the standards or, you know, changing the cut score. So, you know, I think DPI has tried to explain their reasons for why they've made the adjustments. You've seen the reaction. And again, we want to, you know, have the legislature take on the responsibility of setting the cut scores. It is the legislature that by state law in the Constitution also has a responsibility for giving students the opportunity to be proficient. And in a state where we've not had per pupil funding keep pace with inflation for 16 years, we are last or close to last in the nation in supporting students challenged with disabilities. We don't have a policy to support students challenged by poverty, which actually the Vincent First Voigt decision in the state of Wisconsin called for back in 2001. It's fine to set the bar wherever we want, but it's not, you know, you also, it's kind of like, Pat, say you had a neighbor and they said, we're going to have this new standard. We're going to feed our kids three times a day, right? This is our new policy. You went out, you bragged to your neighbor. We got a three times a day. We're going to feed them breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That's our policy. And then you said to your neighbor, okay, well, how much did you budget for that? And they said, well, we only budgeted for breakfast. Well, okay. So you can set your food standard of three times a day, but if you're not going to fund it, you know, what does it really mean? So, you know, it's kind of like the, you know, we've talked about two-thirds funding in our state funding system, but you always have to ask two-thirds of what, right?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. And so now for those who might be hearing this and saying, well, are they just making excuses because there's, you know, state funding hasn't kept up with inflation, state funding has been practically hostile toward public education, and so you're lowering your own standards as a result. It was you or somebody else that put it a bit more clearly. We have seen the purposeful underfunding of public education over the years and unfunded mandates. And I'm not the only one who thinks that there's more to it than that, that some folks in Madison are trying to pave the way to privatization and giving so much of our tax dollars now to the voucher school system that I think that what we're doing with the test scores, again, I don't recall if this was your phrase or somebody else, but this is high stakes accountability. And if there's high stakes accountability, then you'd better attach a fiscal note to it so that people know that, you know, these dots, nobody's forcing those dots to connect. They just do connect.
Yeah, I think, I mean, at this point in the history of Wisconsin, and as you bring the voucher concept into it, we've seen a long history of people who've advocated voucher policy also fighting against private schools having to take similar assessments. And so that ends up being part of this conversation. If these assessments, these standards are going to be put out there for public schools, doesn't it make sense that these same standards should be put out there for private schools that are receiving public money? And I think people agree with that. And again, this is, you know, it's also kind of not a partisan issue. You go back to the Blue Ribbon Commission report from 5-6 years ago that the state legislature looked into K-12 funding. And they recommended to themselves, Republicans and Democrats, that they provide more funding for students with disabilities, that they at least have funding that keeps pace with inflation, that they do some of the basic, that they actually put money to support kids who are challenged by poverty all over the state. These were the recommendations that legislators made to themselves, and they've never funded those recommendations. So, I think we want high standards for our kids. But then I think we really have to talk about the fact that if we want those high standards as the responsible adults, we are obligated to provide our kids the resources to get them there.
So as important as an election might be for state superintendent of public instruction, is it more a case for voters, if they want to keep their eye on the ball, the eye on the ball should be who their legislators are and who ultimately carries all these things through? Because your state legislator holds more sway in terms of the resources for education than any state superintendent. And I'm not meaning to dismiss the significance of that role, but I think a lot of people are going to try to put all of this into the state superintendent race, and that just ain't necessarily so.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is something to that. I mean, obviously, it's an independent officer, the state superintendent, and has been very important in the history of our state. But it is interesting that the report cards we have today were created by the state legislature. They're in state law. It's not like a state superintendent waves a wand and creates those things. So whether it's the funding and after, you know, when President Obama was in office, there was a lot of controversy about what test should we give our kids? There was this phrase, Common Core, was hotly debated, and people called it Obama Core. And so we went from having a Ford exam to a Badger exam to a name it after something else in Wisconsin exam. There was just this level of inconsistency because it became so politicized. So the state superintendent, you know, has a lot of responsibility, absolutely. But I do agree with you that, you know, making sure that people are talking to their legislators about what they're, I mean, you know, January 6th wasn't that, or I think it was January 6th when people took the oath of office in Wisconsin here again. Mm-hmm. And they made an oath to uphold the state constitution. The state constitution says you have to provide a sound basic education and give kids the opportunity to be proficient. And if we're not supporting our kids with the resources, we're not living up to the Constitution, and that is a conversation for the legislature.
And by the way, those legislators are having that conversation with a $4 billion surplus. And I say it as much as I do with that emphasis as a legislator who had to deal with a $6 billion shortfall. I'm not really, I don't have any attitude with the current legislative leadership other than you guys got a good set of resources to work with to make it a win-win for schools and taxpayers and everybody else. Get to work. Chris Thiel giving us some great background about it as legislative specialist for Milwaukee Public Schools. Chris, again, I thank you so much for giving us background on such an important topic.
Thank you, Pat.
We will be back with more after this. This is Up North News Radio from Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Sorry, that dance break with Luke Mathers was brought to you by me, forgetting that we were on camera during that portion of the commercial break. But you got some good moves there, buddy.
Do I? Okay.
Yeah. What kind of dancing are we doing? We're doing the tap dancing while we await Jane Matinere's arrival to tell us more about what's coming up on Matinere on Air this
week. Good morning.
Across the Civic Media Radio Network. Hello, Jane. How are you?
I am well, thank you. How about you, gentlemen?
Doing great, doing great. You're sitting there in the Greg Bach chair of is he back tomorrow or Wednesday?
He's back tomorrow. He better be back tomorrow.
Yes, he better be.
I'm sure, Luke.
Oh, you guys.
I'm kidding, Pat. But it's been a pleasure.
I know, it's been fun. And Jane, you've had a couple of great guest hosts along the way as well.
Absolutely. And Emily Zephos is going to be back with me today from 10:30 until 11 o'clock. Emily, of course, is an organizer in Allegheny County. She's done a lot of knocking on doors. And so I love to talk to those folks who are on the ground meeting people and hearing their concerns directly from them. I think that's something that those of us who sit in these little rooms don't necessarily get the chance to do all the time.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, just a rock star in terms of the work that she puts in and the dedication to it all. So, yeah, she'll be a great person to have on. What else you got going on this week?
Well, I think today, are you familiar with Carolyn Leavitt?
I am. Wait, is that the new press secretary?
That is the new press secretary.
Yeah.
And over the weekend, Ms. Leavitt was addressing some concerns from folks about tariffs and how this might affect energy prices and heating their homes and things like that. And she had a reply that I don't think I can ever top. She said, well, Jesus didn't have electricity and he did just fine.
Yes, along with that nearly life-size cross that she wears around her neck at the podium there. And look, if you're a person of faith, God bless you. That's wonderful. But don't throw something at us like Jesus didn't have electricity, so it's okay if Canada cuts off, you know, our natural gas and things like that. You're not a serious person. So I'm sure you got some other things to say about that.
Well, it just got me started thinking about all the other things that Jesus did not have. So, you know, Jesus didn't have a car. He had a donkey. He was just fine. Jesus didn't have, I don't know, a liver transplant. He was
AR-15s.
Jesus didn't have AR-15s. Jesus didn't have light bulbs. Jesus didn't have blood transfusions or penicillin. And he was just fine.
Yeah.
So if all of these things go away, my friends, apparently we're going to be great.
Apparently the Trump's press secretary says, yeah, good enough for me. As long as we can look, if I can go look into her kitchen and see if she is churning her own butter or something like that, you know, then I'll feel better. But
I think that's Katie Britt. That's the one who does. That's a whole nother. Katie's there churning, but I'm sure if she's not churning butter, she's not being a very good wife.
That's right. That's the standard. Did you catch any of the Grammys last night?
I did not.
Okay.
I will go back this morning just to look at, you have all that money and that's what you picked to wear. That's one of my favorite games. It's like, you have that body and that money and that's what you picked. Ha!
Yeah.
This is my one break at superiority. It's like, yes, well, I don't have that body or that money, but I still wouldn't have picked that.
Well, but with and one in particular, I think, okay, well, that body, but your outfit consists of basically two handkerchiefs and a bungee cord, you know.
Essentially, a piece of dental floss and some plastic wrap, and you are rocking it at the Grammys.
Yep. The point that I'd made before is that normally Greg and I, and you as well, we talk about all the people that we don't know and the things that we didn't like or were too old for, and I have to say that this year, it'll probably be different next year, but this particular year, I knew more acts than normal, and I was impressed by them more. And in a couple of cases, Best New Artist and Best Country Album, any one of them would have been justified to be the winner. There was just a lot of good talent out there this past year in music, and that for a guy my age to say is saying something.
Well, and that's really nice to hear, because I just had this argument with one of my sisters, and we were at lunch with a friend, and she said, there's no good music anymore. And I said, oh, that is such a boomer thing to say. I'm at the end of the boomer generation. I'm no one to speak. But anyway, good for you.
I mean, I don't even know quite how to describe it. Even when I say even the rap performances, there were some that I really liked. And in part, it's the orchestration, you know, the arrangements as well. I feel like, I mean, all music changes over time. So it's going to go this way or that way. And the way that it's going right now, I just really resonated well with me. It was a good show. Trevor Noah is a very capable host. You know, he's just a little too fawning for me sometimes.
Oh,
but,
really?
Yeah, but he's positive, and that's the thing we need right now. Boy, do we need a little positive now and then.
You got that right.
And that's why, again, we take all of the stuff that's going on in the world very seriously. We don't let the Grammys or other things be a diversion to not pay attention to it. It's to take a break from it, and then we come back to it.
You can't do horrible 24/7. I'm sorry. People are already exhausted. And justifiably so. But as you said, Pat, it's about addressing the things that are very important that we all need to be aware of, and then just taking a little breath, a cleansing laugh, as it were.
Yes, that's exactly it. Jane Mattner, catch her again 10 to noon every day, and Greg's back with her tomorrow. Jane, thanks. Have a wonderful week.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Pat.
All right, Luke, thank you for
Luke.
Filling in so handsomely and capably.
Stop it, please.
It's much appreciated. Tomorrow, as noted, State Superintendent Jill Underley will be here. Then on Wednesday, State Superintendent candidate Jeff Wright will join us just after 7. On Wednesday, Congressman Mark Pocan will join us just after 7:30. And then on Thursday, two more of our new state legislators, State Senator Kristen Dassler-Alfheim and State Representative Christian Phelps. And my thanks to the listener who texted in. I mentioned National Apprenticeship Week. That was in the UK. The one in the US is April 30th. Just wanted to make that correction before I go. Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Up North.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community.
Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.